Morning. Today's daf is Mem Zayin in Shabbos. We left ourselves off yesterday, daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, and it began with the discussion of Muksa, and it continues with the discussion of Muksa, and for the remainder today, we are going to be discussing Muksa as well. As now we've been recounting for the past couple of days, number of days, the second half of the third parak of Shabbos deals with the issues of Muksa. Because the Mishnah and Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis talked about lighting a nair and the use of a nair, so the Mishnah got involved in the discussion of Muksa, because a nair is Muksa. Why is a nair Muksa? Again, the nair is not the fire, the nair is the actual lamp itself. Why is nair Muksa? So it's Machma Sisser. In other words, there's Isser involved in using the nair on Shabbos. So one is not allowed to move the nair on Shabbos. And we got into a discussion about all the different permutations of Muksa. So we are on Mem Vav Amud Beis. And okay. Ramilei Abayla Rav Yosef. Okay, it's about eight lines from the bottom of the Amud. First word in the line is Chacham. Second word is Rami. Basic question that was asked from Abai to Rav Yosef. Mi amar Rav Shimon kafta mota latalta kafta in lo kafta lo. So we know the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon has a much higher threshold in terms of what would be moksa. So in other words, he's extraordinarily lenient in terms of the general concepts of moksa. And as we already learned, according to Rabbi Shimon, even the lamp that I lit with on Shabbos, once that lamp goes out, so you can move the lamp. You can take the oil from the lamp, meaning none of that is going to be moksa. He doesn't hold the concept of moksa, machma sisser. There are things that are moksa according to Rabbi Shimon. We already discussed in the past couple days. Yesterday's daf mem vav mem hey, we talked about what is moksa according to Rabbi Shimon. But in other words, but generally speaking, though, he doesn't subscribe to the concept of moksa, machma sisser. So therefore, the lamp is not going to be moksa. But it is interesting, and the Gemara now is going to make this point, that according to Rabbi Shimon, you have to wait till the fire goes out. Meaning you cannot move the nair while the fire is still lit. And the Gemara's question is really simple. Well, why not? Why not, according to Rabbi Shimon, can you not move it while the fire is still lit? So Ramilei Abayla Rav Yosef, Miyamar Rabbi Shimon, Kafta Motel Ataltala, Kafta Inlo, Kafta Lo, my Taima. So the Gemara says, and why would that be? So Dilma Bahadid Anakila, Kafta. So Gemara suggests the following. Well, I think it's because when you pick up the nair while it's lit, so again, according to Rabbi Shimon, the nair is not muksa. There's no problem with muksa. But the problem is that when you move a fire, it goes out. It tends to go out. And so that's not your intent. Your intent is not for it to go out, but it may go out. Right? Remember every Yontif when you forgot to light your Yahrzeit candle, and then you go across the street in order to get a Yahrzeit candle, and inevitably, you're going to take about two or three times because it goes out on the way while you're trying to walk home. All right, so in other words, it may go out. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's say it does go out. And then what? That wasn't your intent. And remember, we're discussing the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And once again, we have an intersection of two basic ideas of Rabbi Shimon. Number one, Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muksa. And number two, Rabbi Shimon also says that a davar sheinu miskaven is mutter. So now, let's put everything together. I pick up the nair. There's no Muksa. I move it. And by accident, it goes out. That wasn't my intent. I certainly didn't want it to go out. So this is what's called a davar sheinu miskaven. What's Rabbi Shimon's position there? Mutter. So now, I can't see a problem from Rabbi Shimon why I wouldn't be able to pick up the nair while it's lit and move it on Shabbos. D'tanya, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Gar, Adam, Kisei, Mita, V'Safsal, Ovevashi, Lo, Yiskaven, Lasos, Chritz. And the Gemara gives us over here the classic, the prototype example of a davar sheinu miskaven, where I drag a bench on the ground on Shabbos. It's not a heavy bench. It's not inevitably going to make a groove in the ground. Just there's a possibility that's going to make a groove in the ground. But because it's not my intention, so therefore you're not going to, not only is it not going to be chayev, it's going to be mutter, according to Rabbi Shimon. So over here, same story. Because it's not my intent to pick up the fire and to put out the fire, so it should be mutter according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so we're kind of stuck. So the Gemara now is going to suggest the following: Kol hecha dechi mechavein ika isuri de araisa, ki lo mechavein gazar. Rabbi Shimon midrabanan. Kol hecha dechi mechavein ika isuri de rabanan, ki lo mechavein shar Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. So the Gemara tries this down for size. Well, maybe we could suggest that if the Issa that I would violate is an Issa Daraisa, so when I'm not intending to violate it, Rabbi Shimon says, no, don't do that. That's an Issa Darabanan. But when something, if I were to violate the Issa, would only be an Issa Darabanan, and then I have no intent in doing it, so Rabbi Shimon would say that's Mutar Lagamri. In other words, essentially now what the Gemara is suggesting is that maybe what Rabbi Shimon does in his Davishan and Miskaven is maybe he only drops it down one notch. Had it been an Issa Daraisa, so it, without Kavanah, it'd be Darabanan. Had it been an Issa Darabanan, without Kavanah, it would be Mutar Lagamri. And so this is what the Gemara now is proposing. And over here, we're talking about putting out a fire on Shabbos. Putting out a fire on Shabbos is an Issa Daraisa. So without Kavanah, it would still be Asa Midarabanan. Okay. Proposal of the Gemara. The Gemara is going to reject it pretty much immediately. Mesa Rava Rava challenges Mochri Ksus Mochim Kedarkan. Uvavashal Iskavan Bechamim Nechamim Vikshamim Mibinei Hagshamim. Okay, we've seen this already. This is a Mishnah that we've already encountered. Let's say you're selling clothing, and some of the clothing that you're selling is kalayim. Now, why are you selling kalayim? I don't know. That's strange. And who are you selling it to? That's also strange. But right now, none of that bothers us. The idea is as follows. Is right now, you're just simply transporting it from point A to point B. So you can wear it like you normally wear it, even though it's made up of kalayim, even though you are putting it on right now. But the only reason why you're putting it on is because you're modeling it. Your intent is not to wear it. Uvavashalo yiskavein. So in other words, let's say, in other words, it'll protect you from the sun, it'll protect you from the rain, whatever the case is. It's not your intent, and so therefore it would be mutter. Now, the isser wearing kalim is an isser, the araisa. And now because you don't have intent, it's not asr midrabanan, it's mutter lagamre. Now, I know what should bother you right now is, isn't this inevitable? Meaning, aren't you definitely going to get benefit from the clothing that you're wearing? And how can you make the argument now, well, I'm not intending to wear it. What do you mean? You're actually wearing it. Okay, so this is a question that we've dealt with before. Every time this comes up, you have the issue of psik reishe. But right now, for the time being, though, let's move beyond that question, even though it's an important question. And let's just observe that here what you have is an issa daraisa. And because there's no kavana, so therefore Rabbi Shimon will tell you it's mutar lagamri, it's totally permissible. And if you want to be a tzanuah, if you want to be a extraordinarily religious individual, so don't wear it and model it, but put it on a stick and when you go down Midtown, you know how they carry it on the poles, the clothing on the poles. Anyway, whatever the case is. Again, the point that you see clearly over here is that according to Rabbi Shimon, when it's a davar sheino miskaven, when there's no intent, even though it wasn't issa daraisa, it's mutter legamre, totally permissible. Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. Okay, so this part of the discussion now is officially over. So now we're stuck. We're back to square one. The question on the table still remains the exact same question. How come, according to Rabbi Shimon, I can't pick up the Nair while it's lit on Shabbos? There's no muktzah issue, according to Rabbi Shimon, and there's no malacha issue. Because even if the fire does go out, that's not my intent, and a davar sheino miskaven is mutar lagamri, even though, had it gone out, it would have been an issa daraisa. So now we are stuck, and now we're going to provide not only an answer, but a basic concept in the world of muksa. Elam Arava, we're now on the top of Memzayin and Ben Aleph. Hanach Lener, Shemen Upsila, Hol Denase, Basel Sadavar Ha'asr. So, as far as the Ner, the actual lantern, the Shemen, the oil, the Psila, the wick, they all become a base for a davar ha'asr, a basis ladavar ha'asr. And what the Gemara now is introducing us is the idea of, if something becomes a base for a davar ha'asr, so that now base becomes asr, even though the base in of itself is not muksa. There's nothing muksa about the lantern. Again, we're all going according to Rabbi Shimon. There's nothing muksa about the lantern. There's nothing muksa about the oil. There's nothing muksa about the wicks. They're all fine. The problem is that they're all based for a davar ha'asr. Now, my simple question to you is, what here is the davar ha'asr? What? In other words, something asr is resting on it. So what is that? What's that it that's resting on it? So the correct answer is the fire. Right, take a look at Rashi. The Davar also top Rashi on the page. So Shal Heves, the Bechi High Muktza Moder Rabbi Shimon, Shakli Tafel Shal Heves, Ba'oda Bo, V'la Mishum Dechayis LeKviya. Obviously, it has nothing to do with putting out the fire. That's not your intent. Rabbi Shimon says that would be fine, but it is the base for the flame. The flame is Muktza, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, a bit of a discussion in terms of. What is a flame?
Is a flame like an entity?
Correct. It's an important discussion to be had. I don't have full clarity on it myself, meaning when we want to try to give a good definition of what a flame is. It's a physical entity. Obviously, it's a chemical reaction that we understand. But in terms of the halacha, how does halacha view the flame itself? And over here, the Gemara clearly treats it like some sort of entity, some sort of physical entity, because the wick sits on top of the flame, and the oil sits on top of the wick, and the lamp sits on top of the oil, so everything is on top of one another. And even in this case over here, it's not your classic busis. Your classic busis is that I'll take my voice recorder, and I'll put it down on my sefer. Okay? And so now gravity is basically saying, if I move my sefer, you know, this is either going to come with it or fall off of it. But in other words, right now my sefer is holding my recorder. So assuming my recorder is muksa, so now the sefer has become a basel sadavar aser. Over here with the flame, in other words, the flame is not...
It's not one entity resting on another.
Correct. It's not. The flame is not a weight. In other words, it's not like sitting on the wick. It's, you know... Okay, so I understand that in this particular example, it's very hard to just conceptualize to say how the flame becomes a basis. But this is it. In other words, this is where the Gemara introduces us to the idea of a basel sadavar aser. Now, there are many rules regarding basel sadavar aser. We're not going to go through them right now. But just know that, in other words, we're just going to get familiar with the basic concept of a basel sadavar aser. And from this point forward now, the Gemara is going to discuss other applications of this principle of basel sadavar aser. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Amar Rabbi Rumnus. Li hiter Rabbi Latalta machta ba'afra. Okay, I have a machta. It's a shovel, but a shovel is not a good translation. Whatever this apparatus is, let's just call it a shovel. And it's got ashes. And Rebbe said to me, "You want to carry that on Shabbos? By all means, go ahead." Now the machta itself is fine, meaning it's not muksa, but obviously the ashes that are on the machta are going to be muksa. And so now, essentially, what did Rebbe just permit? A basis. Meaning, so here I now have the ashes. The ashes are sitting on top of this machta, this pan. And Rebbe says, you want to move the pan on Shabbos? By all means, go ahead. Based on what we just learned, should be usher. So, Amalei Rebbe Zerla Rebbe Asimi Amar Rebbe Yochanan Hachi V'Atanan. But did we not learn in the Mishnah? We will learn together in the Mishnah. Again, this is where Muksa comes up later in the Masechta. No, tell Adam and Nova, Avin B'Yado. A person can pick up a child even though the child is holding a stone. O Kalkala V'Evin B'Tocha. Or if you want, you can pick up a basket with a stone in the basket. V'Amar. Rabba Baba Chanam Rav Yochanan B'Kalkala Malaya Peres Askinon. Well, if the basket only has a stone in it, you can't pick up the basket on Shabbos, meaning the stone is Muksa. And so now, what's the basket? A basel davar aser. It's something supporting and basing something which is aser, which you cannot move on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, so now I totally don't, no, I'm sorry, not I don't understand. I'm going to qualify that Mishnah. When that Mishnah says that you can pick up a basket even though it has a stone in it, I'm telling you, you know what else is in that basket? Fruits in that basket as well. It is a kalkala malaya pear. So in other words, there are two things in the basket. There's stones and there's fruit. Had there only been stones, you can't move the basket. It has to be that there are stone and fruit on the basket. Just as a general note, I'm sure everybody knows, this concept of basis, let's say you put your Shabbos lichtern on the table, so and it's on a tray, and after the meal you'd like to move the tray. If the tray were only holding the Shabbos candles, the Shabbos light, so that would be an issue. That would be an isser. Because then it would be a basel sadavar aser. So what you should try to do before Shabbos is put something mutter on the tray. Now the tray is holding two things. It's a base for two things. It's a base for something which is mutter and something which is iser. And if it's a basel sadavar on mutter v'iser, so then you'd be allowed to move it. Similar to what we're describing right now. This basket over here in question has a stone in it and it has a fruit in it. that basket you're allowed to move on Shabbos. But if it only had a stone in it, then it's a bustle davar aser. And the Gemara makes this very simple point. Time of day is beperi. Halai is beperi lo. And so now let's go back to this heter of Rebbe. Rebbe allowed me to move the pan on Shabbos, even though the pan had ashes in it. Now the ashes are muktzah, and so now the pan should be a bustle davar aser. So the question is really simple. How could Rebbe allow me to move the pan on Shabbos? Ishtomim kishada chada. Now you know when you're gripped with a really good question and you don't have an answer, so you're just dumbfounded. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Daniel that describes this response of being just dumbfounded. Ishtomim, he was quiet for that moment. Va'amar hachinami de'ithbe karten. Okay, so in struggling to find an answer, so he finally comes up with the following suggestion. Well, this pan, now first of all, why did it have ashes? I didn't explain this earlier. It has ashes in it because this pan was used for burning incense. Right? Burning incense was very popular in the time of the Gemara. I mean, to this day as well. Talking about the legal stuff. So the burning incense was popular in the time of the Gemara. And what they would do to make their house smell good is that they would take incense, put it in a pan, and burn the incense in the pan, and that would produce a pleasant smell for the house. Now, over here, once those spices have been reduced to ashes, obviously the ashes are muksa, and this is leading us to our problem over here. What the Gemara now is suggesting is that perhaps over here, when Rebbe says that you're allowed to move the pan, even though there are only ashes in the pan, maybe there's a couple of granules of ketores, of incense that's still left in the pan. And for those couple of granules of incense that did not go burnt, that were unburnt, so maybe that's what allowed Rebbe to move the pan on Shabbos. Okay. This is now what the Gemara is suggesting. Now this is a difficult suggestion of the Gemara, because essentially what we're saying is, it's primarily ashes, and for a couple of granules of unburnt incense, oh, you know what, for that you're allowed to move the entire pan. Now, Amar Abaye, Karten Be Rebbe Micha Shiva. So Abaye says, come on, these are a couple of granules of incense, and we're talking about Rebbe. Now, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that there was nobody wealthier, as far as the Tanaim are concerned, or as far as anybody's concerned, than Rebbe. Rebbe had a tremendous amount of wealth. The Gemara tells us, actually, that for those who say, you know, I couldn't learn because I'm too wealthy and I was too busy taking care of my wealth, so the Gemara is going to point to Rebbe and say no one was wealthier than Rebbe, and Rebbe found time for learning, did a little bit more than just find time for learning, but Rebbe found time for learning, so you don't have much of an excuse. Yeah.
Was the pan being moved because the space is needed for it?
Yeah, so, right, good question. Meaning it sounds like from the Gemara that bosses, for a bosses, you can't move it even for tzarech mekom and tzarech gufo. It does sound that way from the Gemara. Right, that's a very good point. So the Gemara says, for Rebbe, these granules of incense are so insignificant, you can't tell me that because of those granules, now this is a basis for a davar haster and a davar mutter, and therefore you're allowed to move it. Now v'chitim achazol aniyim, the Gemara says, okay, but is there a subjective nature to this? Meaning, look, it can be used for poor people. There is value to those granules. You're right. For Rebbe, and because of his wealth, it's not that significant. But okay, let's imagine it's not Rebbe. Let's imagine it's somebody else. For somebody else who does not have as much money, or somebody who is poor, obviously these granules would represent value. And so maybe over here, because maybe to Rebbe they don't have value, but to somebody else they do, so maybe we could argue that it is a davar hamutter. V'hatayim, the Gemara says, yeah, but in the world of halacha, everything is, not everything. That's too strong a statement. Things are relative in halacha. V'hatanya. The Gemara says, let's go over an example. An example where we kind of seen this example earlier. We're talking about swatches of fabric. Now, swatches of fabric are going to be mekabel tuma, but only if they have value to the owner of the swatch. Big day aniyim la'aniyim, big day ashirim la'ashirim. Let's say you have clothing of a poor person. Poor person obviously does not have a lot of clothing. And to him, even if you have a small little patch of 3 by 3 inches, gimel by gimel, it's both. To him, it's valuable. Meaning because for him, every garment is valuable. And every patch will be valuable. And if he can have a patch that can save one of his garments, he'll do so even though it's a really small patch. It's only 3 by 3 inches. And big dashim, lashim. Now, for the wealthier person, so for them, a patch of garment, of fabric that's only 3 by 3 inches, pretty meaningless. For him, he's going to need a patch of 3 by 3 tfachim, right, which is approximately a foot by a foot. But if I have a patch of fabric owned by a wealthy person, even though it would be used by a poor person, but for this wealthy person it doesn't mean anything, so for the wealthy person it's not mekabel tumah. So over here as well, meaning for Rebbe, these couple of granules of incense that are left on the pan that went unburnt, because he's Rebbe, because he's so wealthy, so for him it's meaningless. And so therefore, you can't make the argument, well, the pan's got two things on it. It's got Davar Hauser and it's got a Davar Hamutter. So in other words, in terms of gauging whether something is significant, it is going to be subjective based on the person who actually owns it. For him, is it significant, or for him, is it not significant? Okay? Ella Amar Abaye. So now, we're back to square one. We are asking a very simple question. Why would Rebbe be allowing somebody to take this pan, carry this pan, even though the only thing left on this pan is just simply ashes? What's that based on? The pan should be a basis of davar ha'aser. Gemara now, proposal number two of the Gemara, El Amar Abaye, mi dehavei agraf shel re'i. Well, let's say like this. You know, back in the good old days, there was no indoor plumbing. And so, if there was any waste that was in the house, let's say the baby went, or in other words, usually there would be some sort of outhouse. Whatever the case is, if there was a bowl that had in it either excrement or urine on Shabbos, even though the excrement and urine, of course, are muksa, but you're allowed to on Shabbos take out the garbage. In this case, we don't mean garbage, we mean waste, human waste. So that you're allowed to take it out on Shabbos. Now the Hatter, you kind of understood it's intuitive, meaning the Chachamim, although they've made the gzera of Muksa, certainly don't want you to have an unpleasurable Shabbos. And if you have waste matter in your house, which is foul smelling, so the Chachamim gave allowance and permission to take that out of the house and remove it from the house. Right, that also including that is the Hatter to take out the garbage on Shabbos. Otherwise, the garbage stays in the house, it's going to smell up the house. So in other words, anything which is of a waste matter, one is allowed to remove the waste removal on Shabbos. Good. This is what's called graf shel rei. Rei is excrement, and graf explains Rashi is the bowl that was used specific to the excrement. Anyway, and now what the Gemara is trying to argue is the following. The pan is the same thing. The pan with those ashes on it falls under this heter of graf shel rei. The Gemara says, Amar Rava Shei Chuvas B'Davar Rava, says this is really a stretch. And not only really a stretch, but there really are two basic points that I have. Number one, Chada, Graf Shel Re'i, Ma'is, V'Hailo Ma'is. Look, the heter to remove the waste from the house is because it's disgusting, and if it linger in the house, that would make the rest of your Shabbos extraordinarily unpleasurable. Take it out. The Chachamim allow you to take it out. Over here, you're simply talking about ashes. There's nothing disgusting about ashes.
It smells good.
Right? In fact, right. The ashes may, in fact, smell good. So in other words, to put this under the category of Graf Shel Re'i, the Gemara says, it's not good. V'od Graf Shel Re'i Migli V'hai Michse. And not only that, but the bowl of the Graf Shel Re'i, it's exposed, meaning it's a bowl. So in other words, once the waste goes into the bowl, so that noxious air and gas just basically goes out the entire house. Over here, this pan is essentially covered. Meaning, think of what holds your spices for Havdalah. Essentially, it's covered. There are a little bit of holes to allow the fragrance to come out, but it's not exposed. Not like the Graf Shel Re'i. So the Graf Shel Re'i, you're allowed to take out. It seems to be, from the Gemara, and I don't want to say this definitively, but it seems to be that there are two criteria that allows you to take out the Graf Shel Re'i. Number one, that it smells. And number two, because it's exposed, and everyone's going to see it. So in other words, it offends two senses. It offends the sense of smell, and it offends the sense of sight. I'm not sure, to be honest, if that second is a necessary criteria. But over here, however, when it comes to the machta, the pan of the incense, it doesn't smell bad, and it offends nobody's sight. Ella Marava, we're up to the third try. You know how third is a charm. So we're up to now the third try. Why would Rebbe allow somebody to move the pan of ashes on Shabbos? The ashes are muksa. The pan is the basis of davar ha'aser. And third try. So Amar Rav Ki Avinu Bei Rav Nachman Hava Matatalinan Kanuna Agav Kitma. So when we were in the house of Rav Nachman, so what he would allow is the moving of a vessel. It was a vessel made out of a metal, brass metal, whatever the case is, and it had ashes on it. The Alpha Gav Deikala Shivrei Eitzim, and even though there were still pieces of wood on it as well. Now, without Rashi, it's really hard to understand what's going on in the Gemara over here. A, why does Rav Nachman allow me to move it? And B, how is it answering our question? Meaning, how does it explain Rebbe's allowance to move the pan with the ashes on it? Right. Please take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here writes, Kanuna, Klina Choshe, Shemivim Bo Ha'or, Lefnei Sarim, Lehitz Chameim. So Rashi describes this Kanuna as being some sort of metal apparatus. It was hot, and it was presented in front of the princess in order so they could warm themselves up. Okay, don't ask me any better. I don't really understand this apparatus that well, but whatever the case is, Rav Nachman allowed you to move it. Agav Kitme, with its ashes. Now, this Rashi is important, as Rashi now is going to explain, how is this really resolving our issue? Shayut Srichim Le'afro Le'chasos Rok Otsoa. Yeah. So Rashi explains over here, it's not that the ashes are muksa, just the opposite. We want the ashes. We need the ashes. In other words, it was kind of like a spittoon, where what you would do is you would spit into this bowl, and the ashes were there to cover the spit, or for that matter, the excrement. So v'im tomer matzad iser yeshkan, and so now if that's true, so in other words, before Shabbos, I basically said, I want the ashes, I need the ashes. Now, the world of muksa, generally speaking, what do we say regarding things that are not kelim? They're muksa, right? Like we discussed the other day, stones are muksa. And that would mean dirt, of course, is muksa. And, okay, so in general, generally speaking, when something is not a kli, it's muksa. Ashes by default are muksa. But if before Shabbos I point to a particular stone and I say, I need that stone, I'm setting that stone for Shabbos. Why do I need that stone? Well, it's obvious. I need to throw it at the car that's driving by my house on Shabbos. So, clearly. So in other words, so I need that stone. So over here, okay, that was a joke, but over here not. In other words, I need those ashes. So once you designate those ashes, meaning it's part of my spittoon, it's part of what covers up the spit, so then that would be fine. And if that's true, then why mention at all the pieces of wood? So Rashi goes on to explain. So Isur Yeshkan Hain Rabus, the Daf Agav Deik Ala Shivre Eitzim. So the Gemara says, because even though there are Shivre Eitzim, in other words, even though there are pieces of wood, but because those ashes to me are mutter, so it's fine. V'had Rav Rumnos Nami. And now Rashi says, and now let's go back to where the discussion started. Hai machta ba'afra, the pan that had ashes on it, dekamer machta b'shvil afra. It means not that those ashes were an inconvenience, I wanted those ashes. Shayit sarach lo v'daito alai umasmo. Meaning going into Shabbos, I said I wanted those ashes. I guess, Rashi doesn't explain, but I guess it's for the similar purpose of maybe to cover the spit, whatever the case is. Even though I may have other things which are muksa, but it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is I want those ashes, and therefore it would be muta. Meisve, the Gemara challenges. They both agree. That, meaning this would be Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Shimon, even though they have a disagreement about Ner Yashan, if it has residual psila, residual wicks, you would not be allowed to move it. So now the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question, well, why not? So Abaye says, well, that was talking up in the Golo. And so what? So as Rashi points out, Shechashuv Aslam Shivre Psila, Shein Beganim Shal Pishtim Mitzuyin Lahem, up in the Galilee, finding linen wicks was extraordinarily difficult, and so therefore those wicks were extraordinarily precious. Hilkach lo batliv and nasa ner basos lehem, and because they were so significant, so now essentially the nair becomes tangential to the wicks, and because the wicks are muksa, so therefore the nair is going to be muksa as well. But generally speaking, though, if the support item is holding things which are mutar and asr, and there's no particular significance to one over the other, so then I would be allowed to be moving it on Shabbos.
If the flame is extinguished, would you argue that the wick is still at base?
It was the flame which was the yisr.
I know, but the flame is extinguished.
Good. So
would the wick still act as a base?
Yeah, it would act as a base, but the wicks themselves are not muksa. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, the wicks are not muksa.
I understand that.
Right.
The whole point of Rabbi Shimon here is that since the flame is muksa, everything acts as a
base. As a base for the flame.
Now, if the flame is extinguished, right, it doesn't exist anymore.
So the
you argue that the wick still acts as a base?
You could argue that, but once the flame is gone, there's no longer a base, because there's no longer a dover haser.
So why wouldn't he let you move it then?
So right, so that was the Gemara's question, and the Gemara gives an answer. It's a little bit of a stretch answer, but the Gemara's answer is, well, that Mishnah was speaking specifically up in the Galilee, where then the linen wicks were so precious and so valuable that for them it was like a super commodity, and the wicks themselves still retained the muksa status. Otherwise, it would be fine. Okay, and that ends, right? And that ends the discussion of the Gemara about buses. We just scratched the surface of the topic of buses. There is much more to discuss in terms of the parameters of a buses, but we got familiar with the concept. We continue in the Gemara now. One last topic to cover, which, truth be told, as we kind of touched on it earlier in this parak, but one more topic to cover, and we finish the, well, I was going to say we're going to finish the third parak. God willing, we will finish the third parak, but we have one more Mishnah to cover as well. Putting together Lego. All right, this isn't exactly Lego, right? This is more real and more, it's not a toy, but putting together things that come in segments. Levi bar Shmuel Ashkechina l'Rabbi Abba u'l'Rav Huna barchia d'avakayma apischa d'bei Rav Huna. Okay, two Amoraim were standing in front of the house of the yeshiva of Rav Huna. Amlo ma'olach z'mita shel tarsim b'shabbos. We have a bed. This bed comes apart. It's called a mita shel tarsim, the tarsim bed. And it comes apart, and Rashi said, Sarf nechoshes o argadiyah v'holchim me'ir le'ir. Traveling salesmen, if you will. They're blacksmiths, or they are weavers, whatever the case is, traveling from city to city, and they got a bed in tow. So when they get to a particular place, so they put the bed together. Can I put this bed together on Shabbos? Amrule Shapir Dami. The answer is really clear. Sure you can. No problem at all. So the Gemara says, wait a second, Asa, l'kamei d'Rav Yehuda amar ha-Rav u'Shmuel d'amar tavayo, ha-mach z'mita shel tarsim b'Shabbos chayev chatas. If you put together, and this is a statement made by Rav and Shmuel, when you put together a mita shel tarsim on Shabbos, you're chayev karmen chatas. Okay, you violated a malacha. Now it's fair to ask me, which malacha did you violate when you take this bed and you put it together? So I take a look at Rashi chayev chatas. Rashi writes, Hu tchilaso v'gamro v'nimsa ose kli v'chay mishum maki bepatish. Av l'chol gomri malacha v'lo mishum binyan de'ein binyan bekelem. So it's a really important Rashi, and Rashi says, I'll tell you which malacha we're talking about. We're not talking about the malacha of binyan. Why? Because the malacha of binyan doesn't apply to utensils. Anything which is movable, anything which is transportable is not subject to the malacha of binyan. That only talks about building a building, something which is part of the ground and gets cemented to the ground. That's the malacha of binyan. Because over here we're talking about a movable bed, a transportable bed, one that could be assembled and disassembled, so it's a kli, so therefore the malacha of boneh does not apply. It's simply not applicable. What malacha are we talking about? The malacha of makeh bepatish, putting in the final blow. When I take something, a product, and I put it together and I put in the final blow, so then you are violating the malacha of makeh bepatish. Here says Rashi, that's exactly what you're doing as well. So meisvei now, so we are kind of, we are worlds apart from one another. Meaning to the question of, this bed that disassembles and assembles, can I put it together on Shabbos? So we're somewhere between, it's totally okay, and you just violated Shabbos min haTorah. Okay, it's a small range. It's really not that bad. So Meisvei, the Gemara challenges a machzir kana menorah b'Shabbos chayev chatas. If I put together a menorah on Shabbos, you chayev a karban chatas kana sidein lo yachzir v'michzir pater. Now these branches, I don't know what it is. I have in my note there's some sort of whitewash. I'm still not clear what that is. Anyway, the point is that this is not a tight-fitting item. It's not a tight-fitting apparatus. So you won't violate Shabbos min haTorah if you do so, but you will violate Nisa Durabana. It's Pater of Al Aser. And Rabbi Simai Omer, Keren Agula, Chayev Keren Pshuta Pater. And Rabbi Simai says that if it's a Keren Agula, if it's a round fitting item, which means that it's tight fitting, so then you'd be Chayev. And if it's Keren Pshuta, now if it's simple, which means that it's not tight fitting, it's Pater. So then that would not be Nisr D'Oraisa, it would be Nisr D'Rabbanan.
How is this different from yesterday's example for menorah that was reassembled?
Right, very good. Right, this obviously, you got to take what we're learning over here and somehow relate it back to the case of the menorah. But let's just stay right now in this discussion. And so basically now, every b'risa that we've quoted either calls a Nisr D'Oraisa, that's if it's tight fitting, or if it's a loose fit, so it's a Nisr D'Rabbanan. Okay. But when the question was posed to Rav Huna, what did Rav Huna say? Shapir dami. It's fine. It's mutar lagamre. So what support would Rav Huna have in terms of giving a total allowance to do so? Even if the bed in question was a loose-fitting bed, so then when I assemble it, it's assembled, it's not a tight fit, but it's a loose fit, still, based on everything we just quoted or cited, it should still be asur midrabbanan. So the Gemara's response is, Inu de Amr ki Aitana. Well, he holds like the following Tana, meaning there's another source which we haven't quoted, which we're going to quote right now, the Tanya. Mabanos Amita, these are sockets of the bed. Ukaros Amita, the legs of the bed. Velavachim shel skivas, the quiver of the bow. Lo yachzir. In other words, again, it's just it's some sort of socket. So you cannot put it in v'imichzir pater, but if you do so, it would be pater. Top of the next amud, I'm sorry, pater aval aser. It's an isur d'rabbanan. V'lo yitaka. Now to put it in tightly, that for sure you cannot do v'imtaka chayev chatas. And if you put it in so that now it fits in tightly, so then it's an isur d'araisa. Let's call it makib patus, like Rashi did earlier. So chayev chatas. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer imaya rafui mutter. And here we have it. Now in the Tanakhama's position, even if it was loose fitting, it would be also midrabanan. But then the Braisa quotes the position of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that if it's a loose fit, not only is it not pater, it's mutter legamre. So now we go back to the story of Rav Huna. When Rav Huna was asked the question, can I take the mitzvah shel tarsim and put it back together again? His answer would be, it's mutter. What is that based on? Based on the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Bei Rav Chama hava mita galalnisa. House of Rav Chama had a bed. It was a mita galalnisa. Okay, Rashi says it was like the tarsim bed. It could be assembled, it could be disassembled. Hava ma'ajulu b'yamatava. So, and he put it together on Yontif. Now, as vis-a-vis this particular act, Shabbos Yontif, it should make no difference one over another. So, Amalei Ahumad Rabban Larava, my Daitech, Binyan Minatzadhu. So, Nihid Yisur Dereis Aleka, Yisur Derabban Mi'aika. So, he says, look, this is building what the Gemara says, Binyan Minatzad. Right, it may be done in an unusual manner. Now, here unusual simply means it's not tight-fitting. But just simply because it's not tight-fitting, okay, it's not an Issa D'Araisa, but it's still an Issa D'Rabbanan. So, Amalei, Anakar, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Sfirli, Damriim, Hayarafui, Mutter. Good. I understand you have a lot of sources that say it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, even though it's loose-fitting. I don't hold like those Tanaim. I hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, much like Rav Huna held like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and so therefore I think it's Mutter Lagamre. It is a little bit curious that the Gemara over here uses the words Binyan Min Atzad, right? Because I showed you the Rashi in the previous Amud. Rashi in the previous Amud said that the Malacha here in question is not Binyan. Rashi goes out of its way to say it's not Binyan, but Rashi says it's Makib B'Patish. So the Gemara's usage of the language over here of Binyan Min Atzad for Rashi is curious. Okay, it's a nice way to say it. But it is. In other words, maybe the Gemara just simply didn't mean it as literally as the Gemara says it. Okay, and then, by the way, that's the halacha. The halacha is that if it's a loose-fitting item, so you're allowed to assemble it on Shabbos. I know it's difficult for me to say, impossible for me to say, what's loose-fitting, what's tight-fitting. Okay, but that's the halacha. And if it's a tight fit, so then it would be aser. Perhaps even a malacha. Well, no, it's not. We're not talking about nails. We're talking about basically pipes fitting together. Right, it's not necessarily a nail. With this, we're going to now close off with the last Mishnah and Gemara of the third parak of Shabbos. Nosin kli tachas anel kabel nitzotzos. Should sound familiar because we've seen this Mishnah already cited a number of times before over the course of the third parak. Sparks are flying off your lamp. You do not want the sparks to land on your wooden table, on your drapes. Okay, you understand. You want to try to prevent the fire. So what you could do is you could put a plate under the sparks or wherever the sparks are landing. However, and the plate is going to collect the sparks, and good, and now you just prevented a fire, and that's a mitzvah. V'lo yitein l'socho mayim. But the Mishnah says you can't put water on that plate. The temptation to put water is understood because the water is going to put out the sparks the moment it lands on the plate filled with water. But that's exactly why you can't put water on the plate, because that's called kivui. Mimeshu mechab. The Mishnah says that is an act of kivui, and therefore you cannot do that. Now, a couple of points to consider. Number one, a point that we already raised. This is chazar. This is a review of what we saw earlier. V'hakam avata kli me'echano. You're putting the plate out of commission. When the sparks land on the plate, now the plate is trapped under the sparks. And now what you're doing is that the plate now has become an immobile object. And you remember what we discussed earlier? When you make something immobile on Shabbos, you are violating an Isser. How do I describe that Isser? Well, I'll go back to the way Rashi described it earlier in the Perek. And Rashi says it's the Rashi on Men Beis and Men Beis. He writes, "Also, about the kli meichanol lo shiv kli b'makom shalo yuchal odli lo misham dehave kekovel lo makom." It's like you're fixing it over there in that place. O mechabro betit v'damil amalacha. So, and it's like you're cementing it to the ground, and it's like a malacha. Now, Rashi doesn't say the words, but it's like binyan. It's like building. You're cementing it to the ground. So, the Gemara's question over here is, how can I do that? How can I trap, how can I pin the plate under the sparks? Gemara's answer over here, I'm a Ravuna Brader of Yeshua, and he's also saying by Mamish. Same answer we saw earlier in the parak, the Gemara provides over here, which is, you're assuming that the sparks are an entity. Sparks are not an entity, they're nothing. And so, again, from today's Gemara, it comes strange, because what comes out now is that the flame is an entity. Right, it makes everything a basis of davar ha'aser, but now sparks that fly off are not an entity.
Sparks are fleeting.
Right. I guess right. Some
very transient.
Right, they're more transient than the flame. V'lo yitei l'socho mayim imeshu mechabe. Now, this idea that when I put water on the plate, so that's an act of kibui. Now, Gemara says you got to really think about that for a moment. That's an act of kibui. I'm not actively putting out the fire. It's passive aggressive, right? It's right. It's grumma, meaning what I did.
So is water, though. Water is not grumma.
When I put water on the flame, that's not grumma.
If you have water in the plate, isn't that grumma? Is it the same?
Good. That's exactly where the Gemara is going with this next part of the discussion. So I put water in the plate. I'm not actively putting out the sparks, meaning the sparks are going to fly into the water, and then the water is going to put it out. So I caused kivui. But I didn't actually do kivoy. And we have a general rule throughout Shabbos of what's called grama. Now, grama is a very big concept. It comes up in Shabbos. It comes up in Zikin. It comes up in a whole number of places. But basically, the halacha acknowledges that there's a basic difference between doing an act versus causing an act. By doing an act, that's a malacha. If I simply cause an act to happen, so in other words, I set the ball in motion, I set the wheels in motion, but I didn't do the actual act itself, that's what's called grama. And vis-a-vis Shabbos, grama is putter. Now, normally it's putter of al-asr, but now we're discussing not just grama, but grama of kivui. And there are opinions out there in the Gemara that say that gram kivui is mutter. meaning kivui is a malacha, extinguishing is a malacha, but if you will, it's kind of like a lower level malacha, right? It's extinguishing, but it's still a malacha. But now we're taught, but it's what you want to call it, like a malacha greyusa. In other words, it's kind of like a lower level malacha. And now we're not even talking about kivu, we're talking about gram kivu. It's like even one step lower, and as I'll show you in just a moment, there are opinions out there that say that's mutter, totally permissible. So the Gemara starts off this discussion. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Presumably, by our Mishnah saying that it's kivui, which means that you're not allowed to do it, sounds like our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yossi, who Rabbi Yossi says that gram kivui is aser. And anyone who argues with Rabbi Yossi would then say it would be mutter. Now take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi quotes the Gemara that we're going to be learning later on in the Masechta. This Gemara is much later on, in the 120 area of Shabbos. Bechol kisve akosh tektani osa mechitza bechol akelim bein maleim bein reikanim kedei shalot tavor hadleika. Now you know on Shabbos, if there's a fire that breaks out, you can't put out the fire. Okay? And as we've gone over a couple of times already, you simply have to let the house burn down. Okay? And as I've already pointed out, it's just money. That's all it is. Who cares? Now, easier said than done. Much easier. But anyway, there is a Mishnah that we'll be learning later on that says that what you could do is you could make a wall of water. Okay? How do you make a wall of water? It's very simple. Fill up buckets with water, put it in front of the fire, and as the fire advances, they're obviously going to burst the buckets, and the water is going to douse the fire. And there's an opinion later on that says that you could do that. Didn't you cause extinguishing? Yeah, sure you did. And obviously that Mishnah is of the position that Gram Kivui is Mutter. And then the Mishnah continues. I'm reading on in Rashi. Rabbi Yossi, Oser b'kli cheres chadashim aleihem mayim, shein yicholim v'kabal ha'or, v'hein mizbakin u'mechabin esadleika. And Rabbi Yossi forbids it. Because why? Because Rabbi Yossi says that Gram Kivui is Aser. So now that you know all that, so now you look at our Mishnah over here. Our Mishnah over here says that you're not allowed to put water in the bowl to catch the sparks. And why not? Because that's Gram Kivui. And Gram Kivui is Aser. So it comes out now that our Mishnah is only going like Rabbi Yossi. And whoever argues with Rabbi Yossi would disagree with our Mishnah. Okay. The Tizbra, the Gemara says, does all this make sense? Eim Adam Rav Yossi b'Shabbos, b'Erev Shabbos mi'amar. Look, over here, we're not talking about on Shabbos, we're talking about Erev Shabbos. So even Rabbi Yossi, who takes a more stringent viewpoint, but he wouldn't take that viewpoint before Shabbos. V'chitem ha'achanam b'Shabbos. Now maybe over here we're talking about on Shabbos v'atayin, nosin kli tachas aner. L'kabal tzid nitzotzos b'Shabbos v'ein tzarech lomer b'erev Shabbos. V'lo yitin l'tocha mayim b'mneishu mechabe me'erev Shabbos v'ein tzarech lomer b'Shabbos. The Braisa clearly says that we're talking here even on Erev Shabbos, not just Shabbos. So Ella Amar Rav Ashi Afilu Tem Rabbanan Shani Hachem Mimeshe Mekariv Es Kibuya. So the Gemara says that this is less grama and more active, right? Rashi writes Mekariv Es Kibuyav Zimen Kibuy Lehedja Vahavle Mechabe Mamish Ihaviyavle B'Shabbes, because this is more of an act of kibuy. Now, you have to somehow explain how this is more of an act of kibui than putting the wall of water in front of in the direct line of fire. I guess over there, it's hard to fully explain. I guess over there, because it's the fire that's advancing and the wall of water
causing the breakage of the...
Right, correct. And the wall of water is stationary. And right, and it's not, in other words, it's not exposed water. The water is in the barrel and the barrel is going to break it. So that's more of a causation. Over here, in other words, it's water that you're putting right underneath the sparks. So maybe over here it's more of a direct cause and effect than the case later on over there. Okay? Need a better explanation, but that's where we are right now. Ad Khan, the end of the third parak. Tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, we begin the fourth parak of Shabbos. Hadron Alach Kira.